The views and opinions expressed by the hosts on MadisonTalks.com are those of the host. That's why we do it. Give us a call, 608-210-1667. Thanks for listening.
Kaleem Kerr has fought for civil rights in Madison and the country for decades. The former head of the Madison Area Urban League, Kaleem is now fighting to establish preschools for kids through his One City project. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Kaleem Kerr. You are the
sunshine of my Welcome, everyone. This is Kaleem, your host of Perspectives. I'm sitting here today with the one and only Ali Muldrow, who is running for the Madison School Board in Madison, Wisconsin. And we have a lot to talk about today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Good afternoon, Madison. Absolutely. So we're going to jump right in here. You've been a hot topic, mostly in a good way, but in the last 48 hours, you've had some challenges that you run into that most people who run for office do. So we're going to dig into that because I know people want to hear, you know, who is Ali Muldrow and, you know, what is she about? And what is this we're hearing about school vouchers and all of that? So we'll get into that. But first, you know, I just want you to let everybody know who you are. You know, tell us a little about your history, who you are.
Hi, y'all. I am Ali Muldrow. I'm running for school board seat 6. Make sure to vote on April 4th. I was born and raised in Madison. I have worked in the Madison Public School District since I was 19 years old. I have, you know, really emphasized designing curriculums that are accessible and promote the genius and talent and brilliance of all students. I have been a security guard and a custodian and an artist in residence and a teacher's assistant. Right now, I am the director of youth programming and inclusion for the Gay Straight Alliance for Safe Schools, GSAFE. We're a statewide organization that advocates for the rights of LGBTQ students all over Wisconsin. And so I'm really lucky to get to do what I do. I've been, you know, invested in education my entire adult life. When I wasn't working with the schools, I was going to the schools. So, nice. So I'm really deeply committed to public education and to our young people and to making sure that our young people have opportunities that are meaningful to them.
So why did you decide to take, some people would say, the crazy leap to run for school board? Others would say it's a great thing to do. Why did you choose to sign up for this?
I really think it's a profound opportunity. You know, I really had to reconcile with all the women like me, queer women of color, who have never had a seat at the table, who have never been able to be honest about who they are and simultaneously see themselves in positions of leadership. I made the decision really early on that one of the most important things to me in running was to stay true to who I am, to make sure that my young people that I'm working with know that I am having an expansive conversation about my identity, that I'm talking about my experiences in a way that is truthful and representative of what it was like to go to school here when less than 50% of African Americans graduated from high school. You know, I have you, everybody who's running, I feel like you have those Eeyore moments where you're like, it's just so hard to be Ali.
Right.
But I have really good friends and really, you know, a really beautiful family that really checks that and really keeps me grounded in the fact that, you know, I can do this, and I'm lucky that I have the opportunity to do it. You know, a really good friend of mine, when I was thinking about it, and kind of, you know, you put the list together of why you can't, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was going through that list with her, and she was like, you know, in Chicago, the school board's appointed by the mayor. So it's not just that you can do this, it's actually that you can do this, you know. And that was a real reality check in terms of what a privilege it is to get to pursue a position of leadership and to get to ask your community to invest in your leadership and promote your leadership and to recognize that my voice hasn't been represented on the school board, and the experiences that I have are relevant to the issues that define our school district right now.
Nice. So, you know, I'm going to have Ms. Karen Toles on here, who's running for the same seat as you, to ask her similar questions to let you all out there know who are listening, who these candidates are. You know, I find it to be very important that people run for political office and pursue the opportunity to serve the public's interest in these public positions and give the community a chance to hear you out. There was a large debate on social media. And I'm one of these people. I love Facebook. I tell people I still haven't gotten into Instagram. My Twitter account, you know, it gets neglected quite frequently. But I don't know what it is with Facebook. Maybe it's not, I can see everybody's faces. But I happened to be looking at it, and I saw where I was linked to something. And there were like 26 or something like 36 like responses. So I looked at it. I'm like, man, what is this? And then I saw that it was a criticism of you. And I wasn't there, but I want to ask about it. So you were at a forum some point of time in the last several days.
Yeah, they're all starting to blur, and, which is probably a little bit.
So I ran for school board in 1998, and I know as I got towards the end, I literally lost steam. I mean, it takes a lot out of you, but it was fun. But, you know, the question came up about school vouchers, and, you know, you took some hits from, you know, a radio commentator who was very well known, John Sly Sylvester.
Yeah, I interned for John for 4 years in high school. I worked with WTDY and Chris Kroc talk in the radio, and, you know.
So people probably don't know that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you've been here.
Because he was hitting you pretty hard. He basically aligned you and said you were for school vouchers, and he wasn't going to support that, and he went further.
Which is so interesting, because I think I've very consistently said throughout the campaign that I'm not for school vouchers, that I'm not for private charters, that I'm not for the privatization of education. I don't believe in, you know, parent contracts to subsidize parents who pull their kids out of schools, transportation. I really think that public funding should be spent on entities that are accountable to the public. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty passionate about that. I did not say that I was in support of school vouchers. If you go back to that forum and you look at the transcript, what I was trying to have a nuanced conversation about was, and the question was, you know, what do you say to a parent who's sending their kid to a school that is not promoting the success of their students in general, that a lot of students are really, really struggling in that school? What do you say to that parent when they say, I want a voucher? And I was really saying that, you know, I have a lot of compassion for a parent who wants what's best for their kid. Mm-hmm. And I think that we really have to have a conversation with parents about what do you think that you can get outside of MMSD that you're not getting within MMSD, and how do we make sure that your students' needs are being met? Because I think that's a real conversation to have. I think it's unfair to a parent to say, you know, your concerns aren't valid, or, you know, you have no right to consider alternates, or, you know, I think it's problematic to pit us against each other and lose sight of the needs of the young people we're here to work for. Mm-hmm. And so I am not for school vouchers, but I am for supporting the needs of students and making sure that students have access to an excellent education. And I think that means we have to be really honest about the areas in which we're struggling to serve our young people, and we have to work together as a community to confront the realities of our district.
So we're going to get into talking about charters and other things here, but I want to just make it clear to people. You know, I've known Ali for a while. My family, we came back to Madison with our children in 2010. And it was tough for my older children because my oldest son was a senior. It was his senior year. And then my second oldest, it was his junior year. And, you know, I have another child who's also very brilliant. My daughter, Alamira, she was in the honors courses in her middle school. And at her middle school in Prince George's County in eighth grade, they give the children ninth and 10th grade level classes in the honors program, but at the middle school. And so when she got here, they didn't have that system set up. So she had to enroll at West High School, but she was a student at Cherokee. But then she'd take two or three classes there. We'd pick her up every day and take her to West High School, where she finished classes, and she couldn't participate in clubs, sports, anything. Mm-hmm. And so she had a hard time connecting, but because of her older brother was there, she really felt that connection to their peers. But then when he graduated, and my older son, he was just trying to get through. Mm-hmm. She went from being a straight A student to starting skipping class, bringing home D's. And so we ended up switching her. But Ali was the one person in the school, along with young Kobe. I like Kobe, the dancer. You guys had this art form of urban spoken word and things going on. It really helped my children find something that they were used to in Maryland and find something to connect with that allowed them a way to connect with their peers in the school and this community. So I appreciate that. But she and I disagree on school vouchers. And it's when true. Somebody said that they aligned us on school vouchers, I was laughing because I said, I know this. This woman told me she didn't support that before. And so, you know, my friends, the people I know, like, you don't have to be my friend. You cannot support something that I don't support, like, or I vice versa. It doesn't mean I'm going to dislike you or not hang out with you. I have a whole lot of people in my life that I just don't agree with them. They don't agree with me. You know, my way I look at people is, do you care about people? Do you mm-hmm. care about the community you live in? If you have other ideas, then let's hear them. You know, I'm open to hearing people's ideas, and I won't dish you like you got dissed on that Facebook page. I won't slam people like that. And even though I have a lot of friends who slam me on Facebook, but they never go too far with it. So I hug them and see them when they don't talk about my mama or anything like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I want to be clear though with people, because people wonder about my position. I support school vouchers for low income children who have been trapped in failing schools and failing neighborhoods that we, the people who fight against those same vouchers, have abandoned and neglected. And so I'm all for, I came out of the school of understanding of historically black independent schools. And so, you know, when the community didn't educate us out of slavery, and even through all of Jim Crow, we had to find ways to educate ourselves. And so people don't realize that the voucher program in Milwaukee that people always rail against was started by black people who came from the same school of thought. Mm-hmm. Milwaukee had abandoned black people in that community. The segregation was terrible. The way people were treated and the undereducation of our children was awful. And so they decided that first they couldn't get the state to create their own school district on the north side. This was Dr. Howard Fuller, Polly Williams, several other people whose names I can't remember were involved with that. But Tommy Thompson, who I believe was in the assembly at the time, got behind him and he was governor. They passed the bill to create the voucher program in Milwaukee. People don't have that history. And that is still not that means that people should support school vouchers. But it's like my support of vouchers is limited. And people nationally know that I led the creation of the school voucher program in D.C. But I want to say that, you know, personally, I don't think that the statewide voucher program is necessary. I do like the opportunities it's providing to schools like Marcio Sayera. I used to mentor his brother. Great family. Mm-hmm. Similar challenge coming to this country from another country, being dumped into ESL classes in our schools. But he's a man of faith. He had a calling to start a school. And I went over there and visited his school. It is absolutely awesome to see all those children getting a great education at his school. And these families are poor, most of them. There's no way they could afford that. But, you know, it's given their families an option that voucher is supporting. So I support that. So I just, you know, I want people who hear this to know that, no, Ali's not aligned with this. She doesn't have to support school vouchers to get my support or to get anybody else's, I don't think. But I think people should look more broadly at what those things are. So you cannot support somebody. That doesn't mean you got to blow somebody up.
No, it's true. I think that we can engage in a conversation in which we're critical of one another, mm-hmm. you know, and we're thoughtful about one another's stance. But I think I look to communities like Milwaukee, like Detroit, like Philadelphia, and what, you know, privatizing education has resulted in. Mm-hmm. And communities that have had long-term relationships with the privatization of education. And it hasn't produced, you know, kind of the promise of equity that that it's been associated with, and it hasn't been accountable to that promise. And I think that we really have to look at how do we solve the problems within public education? How do we resource our schools in a way in which our young people can be successful and can have, you know, options within their schools, options in terms of how they're going to approach their education, how they're going to be supported within their education? You know, I think my primary reason for not being able to support school vouchers is really looking at the history of the communities that they've impacted, and also really looking at what it means to give public funding to a private entity that retains the right to discriminate against certain students, to discriminate against students with disabilities, to discriminate against LGBTQ students and LGBTQ families and many other students. So I think, you know, there's an issue of accountability and being able to being able to ensure that the programs we're creating live up to the promises, that they give to people. You know, I think equity is really a really important thing in our society, and I think we need schools that promote equity.
So there will be people who listen to this and wonder, Colleen, why don't you push her on that issue? Why don't you push her on it? Guys, I'm not going to do that. This is an opportunity for her and other candidates. Again, my job here is not to support candidates or ask you to do that, but to get them to share their perspective on this show called Perspectives. I'll be back in a moment with Ali Muldrow. This is Colleen Kerr, your host.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com, looking for your creative commentary. You're listening to MadisonTalks.com, stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
All right, this is Kaleem. I'm back with Miss Ali Muldrow, who's running for school board seat what?
Seat 6.
Seat 6. That campaign is underway. The election is in April. We hope that you all come out and vote. Whoever you vote for is your business, but we still hope you come out and vote. Don't let this be an election where very few people show up. It's a statement about your commitment to our children when you do that. So I want to get back into this conversation with you. We ended talking about school vouchers. I'm going to move on from that. Hopefully those that, they got enough dose of what that was all about.
If you want to know where I stand, feel free to reach out and ask me.
Awesome. And so, you know, let's talk about your teachers and the schools. I have a belief that all schools across this country are under assault, and they're under assault not by people who hate schools, but by a nation of adults that care very little about children.
Yeah,
I believe that. I believe that we have lost our sight. If you ask us if we love kids, we'll say yes, and we probably do. But we don't act like it on a daily basis. This community is unique in that they will pass a referendum after referendum for the schools. But still, we have crumbling school buildings that you can't see it from the outside necessarily, but it's happening on the inside. The quality of education and the cost of everything is going up, but yet we don't allow our schools to increase their cost to stay competitive. In the arena of preparing children for high quality opportunities later in life. What's your stance on these things? I mean, where do you come down on what our schools really need in order to be successful for our children?
I think what our schools really need is innovation and clear communication with our community and with our educators. I think that we need to empower our educators to make real decisions about who they are in the classroom, about how they're approaching the work. I think we need to give educators the space to work with every kid in the way that's effective for that kid specifically. I've worked with so many kids over the course of the last 10 years, and I think every parent knows this, is no two kids are the same. You know, kids need very different things, need very different approaches, need different mechanisms for support and encouragement. And so I think that we really need to be innovative around how we support the folks we're working with, and how we make sure that folks have a seat at the table, and folks feel connected to a leadership that is available to them, that is available to hear from people who think differently than themselves. I think that's really, really relevant to how we move forward. I think we have the opportunity to be really innovative in this current moment, to really stand up for our schools and for our students. And I think people think that, you know, somebody asked, what do we say if we, while we're canvassing, if somebody says, I don't have kids, you know, I'm not really into schools. Well, I think you ask that person, what do you care about? You know, do you care about sustainable energy? Because these are the young people who are going to be the innovators of that in the future. Do you care about safety? Because you want intelligent people making decisions about how to keep your community safe. You want an informed electorate that starts at school, you know? So I think we have the ability to have schools that really promote and cultivate the intelligence of our children, that really aim to cultivate brilliant thinkers. And I think that requires us to have a firm analysis of where we're at right now, where we've been, where we're coming from. And it also requires us to stop aiming to get a little bit better. You know, I think that we really struggle in our community with the idea that if you go from 38% of African Americans graduating to 50% of African Americans graduating, that's really exciting. I'm not comfortable with the idea that we go from having one of the largest achievement gaps in the country to having the second largest or the third largest or the fourth. I think we have to aim for the forefront of inclusion, and I think that requires us to be really creative. I think it requires us to really look at the kinds of benefits packages we're giving our teachers, the kind of maternity leave, whether or not we're offering, you know, daycare in our schools, how we're supporting students who have children, how we're meeting the needs of students who are experiencing homelessness. I think that requires that we really dig deep and look at ourselves and then decide as a community that we want to move forward and that we want to aim for the forefront of inclusion, that we want to have a school district that is very proud of the success of every single child and is deeply invested in allowing young people to access that success. When I've talked about some of the things that I think are possible for our district, I think folks will say, well, isn't that really hard? When you talk about having student-led learning or experience-based learning, you know, isn't that, you know, going to cost you much, or isn't that too big to do? And my response is, I think it's really hard to have one of the largest achievement gaps in the country. I think I don't think there's anything harder than what we've got happening right now. I don't think we're in the position we're in right now because it's easy to be in this position. I think we've created systems that don't work, and we have to acknowledge that. And then I think that it is an incredible privilege to get to move forward towards equity. You know, I think the hard thing for me is to sit back and accept that we have a system that isn't fair to all children. The thing that is inspiring and compelling is the idea that we were born at the perfect time to change the world. We can do something about it. You know, none of this just happens to be. It's all been created. And I tell my students this, you know, you're more creative than your oppressor. You know, wow. you have the ability to envision a world that is fair and just and pursue it relentlessly, you know, and to create it. And so I'm excited to do the work.
So you laid out a great set of agenda items there. The role of school board member is really three things. One is to represent the interest of the public and ensure that the public's interest is represented on the school board. I hope policy, you know, the school board is different because everybody can vote for it, which is what I like here. It's not by a district or something like that. And people get into, well, my voters, as though they own voters. But it's really the broader community you got to think about. Second is you've got to ensure that the resources that the community invests in schools is well used.
Yeah.
So, but then the third is you have a superintendent, Dr. Jen Cheatham, who is responsible for a $500 million enterprise. And she really runs the schools, but she's accountable to the community through you. So you have to provide some measure of supervision, but also governance support. What's your partnership going to be like with Jen?
Well, I think it's you're part of a body of governance. I'm one of seven votes if I'm on the school board. And so I think how you work with people is really essential to the work, you know. And I am really passionate about how to sustain quality work. I think we have a very reactive relationship. What are you going to do when somebody doesn't meet a goal or you know, rise to an occasion or meet an expectation? And I think that that's one way to think about it. But I think the other thing to think about is how do you sustain and promote quality work? How do you make sure that when somebody's doing a great job, when somebody is, you know, risking a lot in supporting, you know, trans youth that go to our schools, when somebody is making clear statements about inclusion, that you are supporting their work, that you are respecting their leadership, that you are, you know, having a consensual and open dialogue with the people that you're working with. So I think, you know, making sure that I am learning as much as possible from the other people on the board is really important to me, making sure that I am utilizing the skill sets that they bring to the board, that I am bringing out the best in the people that I'm working with. You know, because that's why I work with kids. I don't work with kids so I can tell them what they did wrong on an assignment. I work with kids so I can tell them what they did right, not to give up, to keep going, that they're getting better at it, you know? And I think that is my approach to support.
How would you handle it if you ran into a serious disagreement with the superintendent? How would you handle it?
I think that, you know, we would have an ongoing dialogue, you know, a respectful dialogue in which we would, you know, hopefully be open to hearing from one another. I've worked with Jen, you know, and I've been really impressed with her ability to take feedback from the community, to engage the community, to listen to people who have different opinions than herself, to be willing to challenge herself, to think about, you know, perspectives that are not her own. So I think that we would have, you know, a really robust conversation and an ongoing conversation. I think that the idea that we're going to fall into alignment isn't actually to our benefit. You want people who are thinking differently. You want people who are looking where you're not looking, who have seen things that you haven't seen. And I really respect people's abilities to bring in perspectives that are, you know, different than my own.
So, you know, I think school board members are great people. But I think those school board meetings are boring. Literally, I used to try to watch the board meetings. I can't watch them anymore. And you know why? Every time I watch the board meeting, I stare at those same ugly drapes that are behind the stage. I stare at that same old stage. You know, my aunt that raised me went to elementary school there.
Whoa.
The stage is still the same. I mean, seriously, they might have put more polish on those steps, but I don't think they replaced those steps since they were built.
Doyle looks exactly the same as it looked when I was a kid.
It looks like this depressing. If I live, hey, you guys who are at the Doyle building, you all should go on a revolt, man. You guys should, like, literally, I would be down at the city county building saying I'm not coming to work. They've got rooms with no windows. What do we know about windows in psychology? I mean, how do people do their best thinking when they're working in a dungeon. I mean, that's what it feels like when I'm there. Hey, Jen, I'm calling all y'all and your school board members out. You guys got to get a new building. But no, seriously, I think be a little innovative as board members. Why can't we have school board meetings out in the community?
I think that's a really important question. I think that's something that both me and Nikki, who's running for seat seven, have talked a lot about, is how to make sure that the materials that are relevant to school board meetings are accessible to people. So people are getting, you know, bullet points and summaries of large bodies of documentation so that they have the time to process it and feel well informed about what's going on in their schools. I've thought a lot about, you know, I've gone to a lot of school board meetings over the course of my life. And I've thought a lot about who actually gets to be in that space, who can actually make it to a meeting at 5 o'clock on a Wednesday evening or at 5:30 on a Monday or at 6, and who doesn't, you know? So often when I go into those spaces, I am deeply saddened by the lack of diversity that is allowed to participate in school board meetings based on the design of the school board meeting. And so I think, you know, having a relationship with how do we use multimedia to make sure folks can, you know, Facebook town hall. So if you're exhausted but you have a question and you want to see somebody speak to it live, that you have the opportunity to do that. How do we, you know, one of the things I kind of make fun of about the school board is that when you go to talk to them, it's a little bit like Potter's office from It's a Wonderful Life, if you're familiar with the film. Yeah. But in that office, he has you come in and you sit in front of him and the legs are cut off your chair so that you're lower than him. And in the school board meeting, we really have to reconcile the power dynamic that is implied when you have people, you know, a few feet below you when they're talking to you. What is that representative of in terms of how we feel about the people who are taking their time to come and tell us about what's going on with their kid, which is hard enough to do.
And it's hard to sit in those seats. I'm still on this kick. I mean, those chairs were made, those flip down chairs were made for kids.
I mean, I'm grateful for every opportunity I've gotten to be in front of the school board, you know, but I think that we can expand access to the conversation if we look at our approach.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you 100%. But the one other thing I got to mention about this place, could you guys move the lectern up? Because when somebody's standing there, whoever is right behind them is staring them right in their behind. Mm. I'm getting on this because we got to stop doing stuff the old way. We got to embrace some new ways people are doing things. Spice it up a bit. Move that school board meeting around. Let the community get more engaged. This is Kaleem Kerr on Perspectives. I will be back with Ali Muldrow in a moment.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com, looking for your creative commentary. You're listening to MadisonTalks.com, stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
All right, this is Kaleem Kerr back with Miss Ali Muldrow, who's running for seat 6 on the Madison School Board. We've been having a good conversation here. I hope you've been able to listen in for the whole show. If not, remember it's podcasted almost immediately after this show is over. You can go back online to where you're listening to this. share that link with your friends and let them hear what we talked about today. But I want to get into some things around school innovation. You just talked about that terrible, rusty old Doyle building. I forget it was called, the name of the school it used to be called years ago, but it's right by the Cole Center. So you're sitting next to this beautiful, big building that I think Herb Cole put $10 million in, put his name on it. We've got a little old rusty school building right next to it that only benefits from the parking fees that the university charges for basketball and hockey games. But we have school buildings across this community that look the same way.
Mm.
There is dark, and it's dungy, and it's dirty, and look like a dungeon, some of them. I went to West High School. I went to Franklin Elementary School for kindergarten. Franklin looks like a great historic building that I wouldn't want to be educated in.
Yeah, I went to Emerson, Sherman, and East High School. And, you know, I think that the facilities that we have for our students are really...
They're not inspiring.
They're really relevant to the... they have an impact on our young people. They have an impact on the way you feel about yourself. I remember I was in theater at East, and I'm very grateful for the opportunities I got to be in theater, especially when I look at the way those opportunities exist right now for students of color. But I remember the first time I went to Verona and saw their theater and saw their dressing rooms and just this feeling of how unfair it was that we had a completely different relationship to the spaces that we were supposed to be learning in, and that those spaces you know, really, really functioned very, very differently. I'm really excited because East is finally gonna have a new theater, you know, and even going to West, you would be like, woof, we're on the other side of town for real. But I think making sure that we are creating facilities and spaces for our young people to learn that are engaging and inspiring is really important to me. And I think there are some places in which you can do that in a way that's really efficient and promotes the education of the young people themselves. I think, you know, having murals in the bathrooms, if you go to the School of Ecology at UW-Madison, every single bathroom is a classroom in and of itself. I mean, they have blackboards to write supportive messages or to answer a question of the day in them. You know, having mirrors that celebrate that young people are beautiful. You know, to have our spaces inclusive of messaging that's important to young people and inclusive of the art of young people themselves is really relevant. And I think that we have the talent to do it. We have so many young people who are incredible writers and incredible artists and want to be a part of their schools. They want to make their schools into places that are, you know, really, really beautiful places to learn.
I think about it all the time. You know, I have my kids, long time ago, the younger kids, I don't know if they play this because now they have things like Minecraft, but SimCity. You know, where kids could build cities. And I wonder, you know, if you had a child and they had a chance to choose 10 different buildings, would they choose a building that looks like the Doyle building to go to school? Would they choose an old looking elementary school, an old looking high school? What would they choose today? You know, I wonder, like, businesses, people out there who make money and build great buildings, would they build something like that for their employees to attract them to it? The only place I'd ever been, because I worked directly with John Walton of the Walmart family on a lot of the education work I did years ago, and I had a chance to go to Bentonville, Arkansas, and their building is an old building, man, for Walmart. I don't know. I'm sure they've got more. Their headquarters, they had other things around it, but that's the only place I've ever seen that looked like that wasn't a manufacturing building, you mm-hmm. know? But why is it that we can't get the school district to push a major facilities plan, challenge this community, this county even? Because look at what they're building in Middleton, the Comrie Middle School. It looks fantastic. Sun Prairies High School, off the chain. the schools, was this Stoner Prairie, or forget the name of the middle school that was right down the street from us when I lived on Lacey Road. Our kids went to Madison Schools, but two blocks away was their middle school. Looked phenomenal. The grounds. Why aren't we building new schools in Madison? Why aren't we, you know, I know we have Olson, we had Chavez. That was to deal with population growth. But what about
well, and we have Wright Middle School, which is right. particularly, it's. I mean, that's a gorgeous building.
Right. But then think about those schools that have been around forever. Mm-hmm. We can't do real STEM learning in these schools. We can't do things like that. What's it going to take for us to get the school board to really push this community to support things like that?
I think that it takes an idea that feels obtainable to folks, and I think that our young people have to be invited to the table in terms of what is going to create the space that you need to learn from. But I do think that our young people, more than being compelled by the space, you know, the method and approach to education, the way a young person is going to feel about learning in the classroom, you know, I think I've worked with students all over this district. And if they feel connected to the people, if they feel connected to what they're learning, they're there. They're there. They're there in that, you know, in that auditorium. They're there in that basement art classroom. They're there. And they're excited to be there because they're connected to the community that is building that space up. And so I think that we need to really have an engaged community talking about what are the spaces that our students need, and then how to interact with those spaces. Do we really think that, you know, it is a necessity to learning at the age of six to sit in a desk in a row quietly for the majority of the day?
Do yes, we indeed.
Do we really think that our kids are getting have access to things that are important?
Are they
about
happy
themselves?
Learning that way?
Right. I ask people all the time, how many of you got in trouble for something you were really good at? You know, how many of you got in trouble for something that you turned around and you do for a job?
I always did. Drawing on the desk. I drew beautiful artwork.
I got in trouble for talking all the time. And now I feel like that's, you know, that's the majority of my job is talking and connecting mm-hmm. with people. And so how it would have looked so different if somebody had said, yo, that's your gift. That's the area that you need to explore. And we're going to make space for your voice to be important at school. We're going to make a curriculum that works for somebody who wants to engage in conversation, who feels the most inspired when they're working in collaboration with other people.
So you just led me to another question. And I've told this to Jen Cheatham and the others. You know, there's the school that I was pursuing, Madison Prep, which is an all-boy school and an all-girls school. There's a lot of urban legends around that school and what it was intended to do. It was intended to break the union and not support social workers and all of this stuff. This is your show. This is your time. So I'll get into that at another time. Mm-hmm. However, you know, the type of schools our kids need. You've been really heavy into the urban arts. Why don't we have a school for performing arts? I think that it's criminal.
Oh, man.
That so many of our children have such an art talent, but we don't cultivate that art talent from the time they hit our school buildings until they graduate. They have all these prerequisites they have to fulfill, and by the time they get into real artwork, it's 9th, 10th grade, where a lot of our children have already bought out. What about trade school? Children who are gifted tactilely with their hands and thinking. That's a thinking person's world, science. It's not a dumbed down thing to go and fix a car, you know, to build a car. But we're not giving these children opportunities to do that. I personally, listeners, want to start pushing our community and our school administrators on the idea that we need those types of schools. Where would you come down on stuff like that?
I am really excited about the idea to promote the arts within our schools, within all of our schools, and to promote, you know, diverse methods of education within every single school so that young people have access to the tools that really speak to them, that really make sense for who they are. If a kid is going to learn algebra better when they have Legos in front of them, I don't think it's too much to ask to get that kid Legos. I think if a kid can access chemistry by cooking, then we need to have culinary arts programs in our schools. I think, you know, I felt very lucky, and I've talked about this a lot, but I was in theater and I had a director, Tara Affolter, who did two plays at a time. And one would be a historically black play or a play, you know, with an inclusive cast that really allowed students of color to see themselves in the story that was being told. You know, and I went to West High School a couple years ago and they were performing The Sound of Music. I was just at Smile, which was a beautiful production at La Follette High School, but I can't help but notice the lack of diversity in those opportunities. And that's part of the reason, you know, I worked for such a long time in making sure kids had access to performing opportunities that allowed them to tell the stories of their lives and their communities. That's something that's really important to me. I also think, you know, advanced learners is five areas, and the areas that we as a district have not, you know, emphasized are areas of leadership and areas of performing arts. And I think that if you are an advanced learner in the area of performing arts, that we need to be promoting your brilliance. We need to be making space for you. I love the idea was floating around a while ago about turning the downtown MATC campus into a school of the arts, into a public, you know.
Share your idea. I said I was going to push you on that. She started talking offline, y'all. Yeah. We're going to pull her out and make her expose this idea. Share it.
It's true. So I shy away from this idea because every once in a while I have these ideas where good friends of mine are like, you are unrealistic. But I, you know, I've really thought about what would it look like for our community to sell the Doyle Building and to buy the MATC downtown and to make that into something really extraordinary that really attracts students and families to our district.
So we're going to let you build on that when we come back. This is Kaleem Kerr with Ali Muldrow running for school board. We'll be back in a moment.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com, looking for your creative commentary. You're listening to MadisonTalks.com, stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
All right, you all, this is Kaleem Kerr. I am back with Ali Muldrow here on Perspectives. She is running for school board seat 6. She just started to share with us this awesome idea. I think it's awesome.
Thank you.
This series, people got to all think out of the box. I hope these other candidates, people that get on this show, share some of their great ideas too with the public. That's what we need. We need more inspiration. Everybody's down about, you know, either it's whether it's elections or the weather or, you know, whatever it is. You know, we got to find reasons to be up. So tell us more about this idea. We've had this MATC downtown campus discussion. I know they're in the process of vetting potential developers for the project. I think those developers, they're about making money.
Yeah.
But making change. I would love to see there be a developer that was about making change and could think about this idea. Share what your idea was.
Well, I really think it would be a pretty phenomenal thing to keep the downtown MATC a school, you know, and to keep it and to make it a school for, you know, a school of the performing arts for our students. I think it would be an incredible opportunity for us to really have an expansive relationship with what it means to provide public education to all students, what it means to have inclusive curriculums, what it means to be bold and committed to education and to utilize funding to the best of our ability. I think that we really have to have a real conversation about resources right now, about how we're investing in our young people. And you know, I think it's a really, for me, I'm like, I want to have a very thorough analysis, because I can't believe for a second that it costs almost $500 million a year to have one of the largest achievement gaps in the country. I think that says something about the way we're using resources. I think, you know, we seem as a community to be really willing to invest a lot into young people of color when we're punishing them, when we're incarcerating them, when we're addressing their behavior. You know, I think a lot of times, you know, young white women get told, you know, well-behaved women rarely make history. Mm-hmm. And young women of color get told, well, you wouldn't have such a hard time if you behaved yourself better, you know, if you fell in line a bit more. You know?
I can't. I'm not good with women like that. Seriously, what I love about my wife is she's hardcore, man. She doesn't take a lot of mess. She's a loving person. Doesn't take a lot of mess. She's very serious. Extraordinarily bright.
No, I think I think about that in the way I raise my daughters. My daughter just turned 3, Issa, on Sunday, and one of her first sentences was, "No, go away."
Yeah.
And one of my friends was like, "Are you going to tell her to stop saying that to people?"
Like,
I said,
no.
"Absolutely
I like
not. Absolutely
Speak
not.
Speak up for yourself.
That's going to come in handy."
That's right.
All over campus, all over, you know, all
be respectful, but speak up for yourself.
Yeah,
that's right.
She has the right to take herself seriously, to have boundaries, you know, and do I want my children to be polite and pleasant when it's not to their benefit? You know, do I want my children to accommodate injustice? Do I want our young people to grow up and second guess their themselves when they're trying to address a problem because they're trying to figure out the nicest way to say it?
So let me get to that.
That's not what I want for our kids.
We use what we call a postmodern approach to education in this country. It comes out of the democracy of teaching and learning, and which was coined in the 1800s. It's a way of identifying problems, but you don't ever get to the solutions. So we read history, and our two children are asked to discuss the problem. Tell me what the problem was and what might be a solution. But we spend so much time on the problem, they don't construct solutions. So I think, go back to our conversation just a moment ago about a school of performing. I like visual arts, too. Put it all in there. Creative people are the ones that bring us the great ideas.
Oh, absolutely.
The great managers in tech, they help us put it together. I mean, there's a role for everyone, but when you don't feed the creativity of your children, those young people, especially when their minds are like sponges at the earliest ages all the way through, you miss the opportunity to produce people that are going to recreate life.
Oh, absolutely. And when we talk about somebody, I was having a conversation about English because I taught poetry. And somebody was saying, you know, I draw the line at made up words. And I said, okay, well, can you please tell me a word that was not made up? I'll wait. Just what are the words that weren't made up? The language of power is creativity. The top grossing, you know, author a year ago was Dr. Seuss. And talk about made up words, you know, so why not think to the future? When I teach a course called Foundations of Leadership in partnership with MMSD, and I tell my students it's an orientation of the imagination. We look at the way things are, and then we think about the way they could be. You know, we look at large scale systematic issues, and then we look at sustainable solutions. I think, you know, that we have to start really opening up our imaginations to what the future may be like, and understand that we won't define it, that these young people will define, you know, the future of our communities, and that they should only be limited by their imaginations, that they should have the opportunity to explore their dreams.
So before I ask you about preschool education, because we're going to end this in a minute, you know, you got to give somebody else some shine. So who are two or three leaders in this community that we should be listening to? They could be known or unknown, but who else should we be listening to?
I think...
So when our listeners hear about these people, this is the whole goal, getting people to tune in to what other people have to say. They don't have to be popular. They could be on your block.
I think that one of the leaders I am most inspired by is my daughter, Adrienne, who's 7. I think that she has...
She's beautiful, too.
She's a gorgeous human being, and she is incredibly compassionate and thoughtful and interested, and really helpful. I was coaching her soccer team, and she was, like, telling me all the things that folks in early childhood say to little kids. She's like, say 1, 2, 3, and then they'll say, eyes on me. And and then they, you know, so she's a young person that I think that we should absolutely be invested in her leadership, that we should absolutely be looking to her and to children in general for great ideas about how to treat one another and how to build community. A young person that I'm really excited to vote for and to cheer on in everything that they do is Alex Appleton, who's from Madison and is an extraordinary writer, and I think has the potential.
Alex is like another son to me. I didn't know you had it down with him like that.
He sang at my wedding, but just a really profoundly thoughtful young person who I think that we should absolutely be looking to. And then Elhenya Highland at the Y, I think brings incredible insight to our community through restorative justice and what we can do with restorative justice and how to approach children when they've made mistakes in a way that allows them to recover from those mistakes, in a way that allows them access to being constructive and forgiving and kind to one another. And she's a leader that has really made a lot of room for me to learn. I've learned a lot from Elhenya, and I'm really glad that I get to work with. And I guess I would say Brian Jay, who I work with at GSAFE, who is, you know, Senior Director of Policy and Education. And, you know, I'm very lucky to get to work in the office that I work in. I'm very lucky to have the leadership of Brian Jukums, of Mama Jay, because he brings so much soul and so much commitment to the work, and really, just really gives his whole self to the work. And I've learned so much about what it means to be all in from Brian.
Love that. So recognize those leaders, you all. You know, we need to give these other leaders out here, young and old, an opportunity. Thumbs up for Preschool for All. You think everybody should have free preschool?
I think everybody should have preschool.
That's what I'm
asking. I think the window of opportunity is really important, and that we should invest in our kids as soon as we possibly can, as early and as often as we possibly can.
All right. We didn't have to throw her out, y'all. If she would have said no, we would have thrown her off the show. This is Kaleem Kerr with Ms. Ali Muldrow.
Thank you so much.
Vote. What's the date of the vote?
Vote for me on April 4th.
All right. You heard it from her. We hope to have Ms. Karen Toles on next week. But until then, you all, this is Kaleem Kerr signing off. This is Perspectives. We hope to hear you sign in again. And
I'd love to.
I'm looking forward to seeing you out in the community. Thank you.